decades tuned to yesterday, delivering programs from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Coming up in this hour, drama. Later on, it's suspense from 1957, but first an episode of The Mayor of the Town, starring movie actor Lionel Barrymore. The CBS episode from November 4th, 1942.
The makers of Rinso are proud to present The Mayor of the Town, starring Lionel Barrymore. Well, hold on, folks. You're about to hear the newest effort of Harlow Wilcox Shakespeare, poet laureate of the laundry hamper. There was a young housewife named Brown who used to wash clothes with a frown. But she's changed all her ways. Now she smiles on wash days since she first heard the mayor of the town. Well, why shouldn't she smile now that the new anti-sneeze Rinso saves her all the work of scrubbing and boiling clothes? Why, she just lets them soak clean in Rinso's rich suds. Then, with a few quick finger rubs on extra soiled places, they're ready to rinse. Try Rinso yourself, won't you? And now to Mr. Barrymore as the mayor of the town.
Mayor, Dr. Case is in the outer office.
Since when does Dr. Case sit in my outer office? Milton, come on in here.
Please, Mayor, they'll hear you all over City Hall.
Come on, Milt!
Well, if you wouldn't keep my friends out there, I wouldn't have to shout. I'm going to do away with that outer office.
Morning, Mayor.
Morning, Milt. Sit down. So this is an unexpected pleasure.
Do you suppose I could take about a few minutes of your time on a private matter?
Sure, of course you can. Minnie, haven't you got something to do?
Excuse me.
You know, Minnie's getting the doggonest habit of not knowing when to leave. What can I do for you, Milt?
You got faith in my judgment, Mayor. If I said a man was a good man, would you trust me to know?
Yes, I would. To the death. Say, you know, you're looking awful tired, Milt. Maybe you're working too hard.
Well, seems like there's more sick people than ever before, unless to take care of them. We're getting mighty short of doctors here in Springdale.
I know. That's a problem that always comes with war.
Things are mighty desperate over at the hospital and all over the city, for that matter. May and I can't begin to handle the cases that are coming in. I need help.
What do you got in mind, Milt?
Well, I'll tell you who I've got in mind. James Elliott.
James Elliott? Oh, I'm afraid that's pretty impossible.
Let me tell you something. James Elliott is not only one of the most brilliant surgeons in the state, he's one of the most brilliant in the whole country.
Well, all I know of James Elliott is that he performed an operation without permission and the patient died. And he left the hospital and stopped practicing. That isn't too good a record.
No, not too good. But what would any surgeon have done in a similar case? What would you yourself have done? The cross boy had been in a bad accident. His parents were inaccessible. There was one chance in a million that an operation might save him. James Elliott took that chance.
And the boy died.
Well, he would have died anyhow. It was Dr. Elliott's misfortune that the press, for lack of better news, picked up the story.
Yeah, I remember. The whole town was all upset about it.
And his practice was ruined. Oh, he was exonerated and all that, but the smell had gotten round. So he went into the laboratory work and let the other go. I've been spending some time with him lately. I tell you, he's taught me a lot.
Yeah? But what do you want me to do about it, Milt?
I want you to persuade him to come back into practice.
Oh, I don't even know the man.
I've tried to talk to him, but he won't listen to me. He might listen to you.
Oh, I don't know, Milt.
We need every man. I wouldn't bother you with this if I knew any way to accomplish it without you. I brought you a copy of the man's case history. Read it over, think about it, and then decide.
All right, Milt. All right, I'll read it over.
Mr. Mayor, come in, sir.
I hope you don't mind my paying a little informal call like this, Dr. Elliott, but I need your help.
Here, let me take your coat.
Thank you.
Try that chair by the fire. Cigar?
No, thanks, no. It's a nice fire, though. It's a nippy evening.
Yes, I like a fire on a November evening. It's comforting.
Dr. Elliott, You may not like what I have to say to you. You'll probably tell me I'm a meddling old fool and to mind my own business. But there's something that has to be said. It seems that I'm the one to say it.
What's on your mind?
We're facing a bad winter, Dr. Elliot. There's a great shortage of medical men. You're a doctor and a surgeon. I want you to take up your practice again.
You're mistaken, Mr. Mayor. I'm neither a doctor nor a surgeon. That's been proven.
Ah, rubbish. I've read your records. I know better.
A man can lose faith in himself, Mr. Mayor.
Well, some men maybe, but not you. You're too wise for that. The best doctor I've ever known says you're one of the greatest surgeons in the country.
You've been talking to Dr. Case, but Dr. Case is prejudiced. He's been listening to my theories. Theories look well on paper, and they sound well, but ask the people of Springdale. They'll tell you I'm not a surgeon.
The people made a mistake.
Perhaps, but they destroyed me when they made it.
No. You destroyed yourself. You read in the papers that it was your fault that a boy died, and instead of fighting it and proving him wrong, you quit. You left the hospital. You closed your bag and left it closed. Why?
Because suddenly it wasn't worth the fight, that was all. I had worked for years, night and day, unceasingly to save life, and I had saved many lives. But all those were forgotten in the hour that I lost one. Why should I drive myself to save the people who would turn on me in an instant?
Well, I don't know why you should, exactly. Except that we all do it. Somehow, to most people, a good doctor is someone set apart. Someone from God with the gift of life in his hand.
Oh, I've thought about it, Mayor. At night, even now, when I can't sleep, I think about it. I live the whole incident over. The call to the hospital, the child near death. The question, shall I operate without the parents' consent and perhaps save the child's life? Or wait for that consent and condemn the child to certain death? The staff surgeons couldn't be reached for a consultation. I had to make the decision and take any consequences. And always I do the same thing, Mayor. I always operate. If the same thing came up again tonight, I would operate. I would take that one chance in a million to save a life, knowing full well that I would be branded an incompetent and a murderer if I failed. I took that chance, Mayor, and I lost. I'm sorry the child died, but I'm not sorry for myself.
Well, now, you should have explained that. You should have fought it out.
I was not asked for an explanation. I was condemned, and I accepted the sentence.
Will you come back?
No.
I see you're an unforgiving man, Dr. Elliot.
Well, put it any way you like.
Now, does your hate, then, go beyond the city? Did you hate your country, too?
That's a ridiculous question.
I don't see that it is at all. This is no time for feuds or bitterness. This is a time of war. Our sons are fighting on foreign soil. Every doctor here and every doctor with them must do the work of 20. What right have you to sit here beside your fire and refuse to help? What right have you to fan your bitterness as they die?
Now listen to me.
No, you listen to me for a change. It's time you listen to someone. You took an oath to heal and save. Our best physicians and surgeons trained you and helped you and believed in you. What right have you to throw aside the time they spent and call it lost? What right have you to say the people misunderstood me, they jumped to a wrong conclusion and hurt my pride and my ego? So let them die. You've a mighty conceit, Dr. Elliot.
What a way you have of putting your finger on the heart of the matter.
I have no patience with a man who nurses like a sulky child.
Perhaps. But it's only been 2 years. They haven't forgotten, don't you see? They won't want me to take care of them. They have no confidence in me.
I'm not denying it'll be a fight, but it can be won. I have faith in you. Dr. Case has faith in you. And you have plenty in yourself. Now, don't try to tell me for a moment that you haven't. Come on, you. Get those instruments out and polish them up and hang up your shield and fight. The people will come to you because they need you. May take a little time, but they'll come. Well, what do you say, Dr. Elliot?
Mr. Mayor, you've made me quite ashamed.
Good. Now let's get to work.
Yes?
Can you come over to the hospital immediately, Dr. Elliott? Emergency operation.
I'll be right there. Scalpel. Swab.
Breathing irregular. Pulse weak.
Oxygen. Scalpel.
Pulse slow. Weak.
More oxygen. Swab.
Doctor.
Oxygen. More oxygen.
It's no use, Doctor. The patient is dead.
Morning's paper. It was a case similar to the Cross case. They let the doctor operate again, and the boy died.
It's the most disgraceful thing I've ever heard of. That man's a horse doctor.
Well, I'm certainly never going to let that doctor get near our house. I don't know what they're thinking about letting him practice.
I'm going to complain to the medical association. Something ought to be done about that man.
I've been reading your paper and listening to what people are having to say about Dr. Elliott.
A man ought to be ridden out of town on a rail.
Tom, at this moment, I'd like to ride you out. Now, I'm going to make a statement, and you're going to print it. Put that girl of yours on the other phone and have her take this down just as I say it. And see that it's run on the front page in a box. Huh? Hello. Are you ready?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah. To the people of Springdale, you have seen fit to call a doctor of this town unfit to practice. You have seen fit to brand him. In so doing, you've lost sight of these facts. A doctor is not and does not pretend to be God. He's a man of science. Have you got that?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah. If a bone is broken, he mends it. If a cord is severed, he ties it. The body's wasted with disease, he fights that disease. But the bone that's too shattered can't be mended. The cord that's completely severed, sometimes it's impossible to put it together. The body too far wasted doesn't respond to treatment. As brilliant and competent as the doctor is, he can't always win in his continual fight against death. Remember this, my friends. A miracle comes only from the hand of God and is bestowed rarely. Now ask your doctor for competence and honesty, and ask your minister for the miracle.
You have here in the paper, Father?
Margaret. It was given in righteous anger. I hope it does some good.
It's a tough break.
Yeah.
You had such a job persuading him to practice again.
Yeah, it wasn't easy. He was very bitter.
Have you seen him since this happened?
Mm-mm. No. I thought it was better that he fight it out alone.
Suppose he decides to quit?
I don't think he will, somehow. I hope he won't, anyway. If there's such a thing as an evil fate or a jinx, he's certainly suffered from one. Well, Margaret, it's good to have you and Holly here. I'll be glad when you marry John and come to live in Springdale for good.
Hello, Grandfather.
Hello.
Hello, Holly. How are you, Ronnie?
Holly Ann, your face is a sight. Where have you been?
Yeah, where'd you get that black eye, Ronnie?
Well, Ronnie and I were in sort of a fight.
At your age...
What was the matter?
Some of the kids were saying that Dr. Elliott is a quack. And you were one, too.
Oh, so the black eye is in my honor.
You might say so, sir.
Well, I thank you for your gallantry on my behalf. You better see if Marilla can spare a piece of beefsteak.
Yes, sir.
I brought you a copy of the Globe. They're answering your statement in the Clarion.
Oh, let me see it. There. It's an easy matter for the mayor of the town to say the people of Springdale should put their lives in the hands of an incompetent, dangerous doctor like James Elliott. But the statements of Mrs. John Cross and Mrs. Robert Weatherly, whose sons are dead, show a vastly different attitude. Oh, my. I don't think I want to read any more of that.
Holly, go wash your face and hands for dinner. And never mind being so thoughtful about bringing papers home in the future.
Yes, Mother.
Hey, yeah, I think I'll go out and tend to my rose bushes.
Oh, Father, dinner's almost ready.
Oh, I got to get a little thinking in before dinner. Margaret.
It's Holly Ann. Holly Ann, don't you hear me? She went to the store for Mother. Oh, Father, don't stand there. Do something.
Well, where is she? Well, how do you know?
She went to the store for Mother, and I don't know.
Margaret! Now tell me quietly, where is Holly Ann? What's happened?
They phoned the police. There was an accident. A truck ran over a girl. They say it's Holly Ann.
I suppose Springdale's men folks pick up the Springdale Courier and start reading it right on the first page. But a great many of the women folks turn right to the women's page. Mrs. Dorothy Rogers, who edits it, is certainly an expert on how to make a household tick along smoothly. Now, don't blush, Dottie. You know it's true.
Oh, well, I just hate the word expert, Harlow. Makes me sound so stuffy.
Well, you are an expert, and I asked you here so you could give the ladies some wash day hints.
Oh, glad to, Harlow. Let's see now. Oh, yes. One thing to bear in mind these days is to take the best possible care of your washer. For instance, don't overload it.
Incidentally, Dottie, you do know that Rinso's the only soap recommended by the makers of 33 leading washers, don't you?
Uh-huh, yes. I know that. To get back, don't run your washer on and on either.
Well, it only takes as little as a 5-minute run with Rinso to get clothes sparkling.
Yes, Harlow, I know. Anyway, as I was saying, they're not making washers till the war's over, you know. So it's wise to have your washer checked.
Oh, yes. By the way, did you know that the Norge makers are among those who recommend Rinso?
Of course I know that, Harlow.
Now, Dorothy, do you or do you not agree with all experts that Rinso is tops?
Oh, of course I do, Harlow. Why, I've recommended Rinso 1,000 times, if I have once, for a really white wash.
Well, it's about time. And say, don't forget what our educated Bob White says.
Rinso
White,
Rinso
White,
happy little wash day song.
Do try Rinso, folks, won't you? And now back to our story and the mayor of the town.
Operate, Mayor. It's a spinal injury. She should be operated on as soon as possible.
Well, let's get on with it, Milton. I'll tell Margaret.
Better ask Margaret to let Dr. Elliott operate.
Dr. Elliott?
She specializes in these cases. If anyone in the world can save her, he can.
Is that serious?
It's that serious.
Well, let's tell Margaret.
Father, tell me, what does Dr. Case say?
Well, I have to operate.
She won't die, will she, Pop? She won't die.
Margaret, it's a very serious operation. Now, Milt wants to call in Dr. Elliott. It's a spinal injury. He specializes in those.
Call in Dr. Elliott?
He's the best in the country, Margaret.
Father.
We won't do it unless you say so, Margaret. It's up to you.
Do you want him to operate on Holly Ann, Father?
Yes, Margaret, I do.
Then call him, of course, as soon as possible. Only, Father.
Yes, Margaret?
Nothing. Go ahead.
Dr. Elliott, you must come with me to the hospital at once.
I told the hospital on the phone that I would not take the operation, Mayor. Dr. Case can handle it.
Did they tell you who the patient was?
No, they just said it was an emergency.
It's my granddaughter.
Your granddaughter?
Yes.
Not Holly Ann?
Yes.
You'd trust her to my hands?
Your hands and no others. She was hit by a car. It was a spinal injury. You won't refuse me. You can't refuse me.
Aren't you afraid I'll kill her as I've killed the others?
You've
been reading the papers, haven't you? You've been listening to what people are saying about me? Let Dr. Case operate.
No, I want you. This is the life I love, and it's in your hands. Give it back to me if you can. That's all I ask of you. Give it back to me.
And if I should fail, if she should die?
Well, then there's a power beyond us both that says it must be. But if medical skill can save her, you can. Will you come?
How long since the accident?
About an hour.
I'll get my bag. Phone the hospital. Say I'm on my way. Have Dr. Case prepare for surgery. I'll hurry. We haven't a moment to lose. Scalpel. Swab.
Breathing irregular. Pulse weak.
Oxygen. Scalpel.
Pulse slower. Weaker.
More oxygen. Quickly. Swab.
Doctor.
Oxygen.
Pulse is gone, Doctor.
This patient can't die. Do as I tell you.
Pulse very weak, very irregular.
Swab. Scalpel. Clamp. Gauze. Swab.
Pulse strong.
Now, Margaret, if you're going to go to pieces, I'm going to send you home.
But that's my daughter in there. And she has no consciousness of you or me or any of the world she's loved. That's my daughter.
And she's in the hands of one of the greatest surgeons in this part of the country.
She may die. She may die, Father.
Yes, Margaret.
And if she does, I've lost 15 years of my life. If she does, I think I want to die, too.
Oh, Margaret, don't talk like that.
She wanted to go to the movies last night. I wish I'd let her go. And this morning I scolded her because her room was so messy. Isn't it funny? I thought it was important that her room was messy.
Oh, I can't abide a woman who doesn't keep her room neat.
If we'd stayed in Philadelphia, this wouldn't have happened. If we waited until next week to come to visit, this wouldn't have happened. If we hadn't sent her for the butter. There was almost enough butter anyhow, Father.
Margaret, stop tormenting yourself. The world is built on ifs. You can always look back and say, if only I hadn't done that, or if only I'd done something else. It's a bad word. I'd like to have it eliminated from the language.
Look. The door, Father. They're coming out. Father!
She's going to be all right. She's going to be all right.
Thank God.
Good morning, Mayor's office. No, I can't give you any information on marriage laws. You'll have to call the Marriage Bureau. Oh, Dr. Elliot. Oh, how are you this morning, Doctor?
Couldn't be better, Minnie. How are you?
Well, Doctor, I've been meaning to ask you. I've had a pain in my arm the last couple of days.
Well, now, you come around to my office when you get through work, and I'll have a look,
Right.
Now, do you think I could see His Honor, Minnie?
I'll buzz him.
What is it, Minnie?
It's Dr. Oh, that man, he won't pick up his phone.
What are you buzzing that confounded thing for, Minnie?
Dr. Elliot wants to see you, Mayor.
Oh, Jim, come on in. Don't pay any attention to that buzzing nonsense. Sit down.
I just wanted to stop by and thank you, Mayor.
Well, how are you doing now? Keeping busy?
I have more patients than I can handle. Mm. And that's why I wanted
Good. Holly Ann's quite chipper this morning. By the way, from all I can read in the papers, that operation of yours caused quite a little furor.
I have a letter here I brought along to show you.
Huh? Oh, wait till I get my specs on. Here. Let's see now. Dear Dr. Elliott, in the opinion of this hospital, your brilliant performance in the recent spinal operation. We'd like you to consider. Why, this is an invitation to join the staff of one of the biggest hospitals in the country.
That's right.
Hey, that's a great opportunity, isn't it?
It's the kind that every doctor dreams about. That hospital is known throughout the profession for its great work in advancing medicine.
Well, we'll miss you. Of course, we couldn't hope to compete with an offer like that. Well, when do you plan to leave?
Leave? Who's leaving? I sent them a letter this morning, Mayor. Thank you, gentlemen, for a great honor. But I have a previous commitment to the mayor of Springdale. You see, one day the mayor came to me and he said, our sons are fighting on foreign soil. One doctor must do the work of 20. So right now, gentlemen, I'm a little busy.
Jim, I thank you. From the bottom of my heart, I thank you. I don't need to tell you again how much we really do need you.
A few days ago, I had great need of you, and I can't put it into words.
Oh, sir, I have a meeting of school trustees, you know. I'll have to see you later, Jim.
Oh, no, you don't. I came over here to thank you, and you're going to sit right there while I do.
I'm sorry, but it'll have to wait. Minnie, I've got to get to that trustee meeting. See you later, Jim.
What trustee meeting?
Ah, you know. That confounded thing you've been talking about for the last 10 years.
It's the Red Cross this morning.
Can anyone ever make a speech but you?
Not if I can stop them, Jim. Not if I can stop them. I can't sit still through speeches. They make me uncomfortable, nervous. Well, I'll see you later, Jim. Well, what are you sitting there for?
Huh?
Didn't you hear me say one doctor has to do the work of 20? Well, get out there and start peddling your pills.
That's a fine, dignified name for my profession. Pill peddler.
I never knew a doctor in my life that didn't have pills somewhere on him. I wouldn't give a cent for one that didn't. Go on now, scat. You get out and start peddling your pills for the good of humanity. I'll go out and peddle a speech to the Red Cross for the same cause.
Folks, I hate to boast, but when it comes to dishwashing, I'm not so bad. With the aid of my trusty Rinso, I'll bet on myself to win any dishwashing race. Yes, sir, Rinso suds up quicker than you can say, get the giant size for thrift. And those suds really do a job on the greasiest pots and pans in the house, without sending you into pesky sneezing spells either. And without putting a crimp in your budget, for it costs less than a cent a day to wash dishes with Rinso. And you ladies will be glad to know that Rinso doesn't leave your hands rough and red. So, as I said, get a giant size package of Rinso tomorrow. It holds over 4 pounds, enough to keep you smiling at the dishes and clothes for weeks. Be sure to be with us again next week at this same time when the makers of Rinso again bring you the mayor of the town. And remember that Bob Burns, the Arkansas Traveler, is just ahead of us over these same stations. So we hope you'll all hear this full hour of fine entertainment, the Arkansas Traveler and the mayor of the town. Mr. Barrymore appears through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. The part of Dr. Elliot was played by Sidney Blackmer, and our script was written by Miss Jean Holloway. This is Harlow Wilcox wishing you all a very pleasant good night.
Breaks in the middle, it's a suds and frizz, and its name is Swan. Try Swan to wash your dishes tonight. It helps your hands stay soft and white. Hey, diddle diddle, it breaks in the middle. The new white floating soap called Swan.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Mayor of the Town, on Tuned to Yesterday, a CBS episode from the 4th of November, 1942. Although a relatively popular show when it was on the air, not too many broadcasts of the series have survived from the 1942 to 1945 corridor. As World War II was in progress, materials used to capture many of these shows were being sent overseas for the war effort. This is an hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Coming up next, Suspense from October 6th, 1957, with an episode called Misfire, which would be repeated again on the series about a year later.
Suspense. And the producer of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, the master of mystery and adventure, William N. Robeson.
Talent is an elusive and mystifying phenomenon. And one of the most curious things about it is that it manifests itself in the most unexpected places. One of the most talented sound men in radio broadcasting is Tom Hanley. We did not know until recently that he possesses another talent. He is an extraordinarily fine writer. It is his radio play you are about to hear, Tom Hanley's terrifying story, Misfire.
And now... Misfire, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. Ground Zero, somewhere in the desert. We are inside the cab where the bomb, this one called Jackhammer, awaits the impulse from control point some 14 miles to the south. Electronic gossips hum and throb their chatter about the health of the patient, suspended 500 feet above the desert floor. But the unfeeling machines neglect to mention a human factor this morning, an imprint of callousness, a small metal wrench jammed in the track of the electronically controlled door. A shift of sand occurs against one of the great steel legs gripping the desert, and a brown-backed desert tortoise trundles up for a look at his world. A world of sage and sand and space stretching endlessly off into the darkness. No man is in sight. Now that is good. There have been days of hiding from men, but now they've gone. And the tortoise tries his morning legs and plans his new day.
H-1, place eye protectors in position and turn back to fireball. 55, 54, 53, 52, 51.
From 100 speakers 50, miles removed 49, from Ground Zero, the tape recorded voice begins its countdown. No margin for error now, no turning back. Test shot Jackhammer is underway.
42, 41, 40, 39.
On news knob 14 miles away, a photographer from an eastern paper nervously adjusts his goggles and wonders, what would it be without them? 14 miles. Can it blind across 14 miles? A mile and a half from Ground Zero, a 22-year-old Marine corporal crouches in a trench on his knees, his head rammed into his arms, per instructions. He and 1,999 other Marines there to prove that man is not afraid. Not really. But what if something goes wrong?
33.
What if it's bigger than
32.
They think?
31.
He hears the endless moaning of the taped voice.
29, 28, 27, 26.
A little over a mile from Ground Zero, in a concrete bunker with its air conditioning secured, sits a 37-year-old Englishman, a civil defense man, remembering another time he huddled in a shelter. Only then he was a soldier in London, and the buzz bomb screamed overhead. His uniform, now top secret, designed for the future. And he sits on a padded floor with 12 other men. They want to know what chance their cities will have against the day that must never come.
18, 17,
16, 15.
At control points, men sit silently watching instruments
12,
designed to tell them how efficiently Jackhammer does its job.
9.
And
eight,
the tortoise
7,
lumbers across his front
6,
yard.
5.
In search of breakfast.
4. 3. 2. 1.
What happened?
Misfire. It's a misfire.
Attention all personnel. Attention all personnel. This is Dr. Thurston. Test shot Jackhammer is incomplete due to undetermined failure. Maintain position till further notice. You are still on detonation alert.
Dr. Thurston?
What is it, Butler?
Everything was normal on my phase until H-49.
Grant, that would coincide with your variance, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but Frank, you shouldn't have had any reading at all at that time.
On the sub-relay meter, I didn't. It showed normal, and then there was a complete negative to zero response.
Then there it is, Dr. Thurston. It's an on-site rejection of voltage.
In other words, the fault lies at ground zero.
According to these data, yeah.
Well, can correction be made from here? We can't have anybody going out there.
We'll know after we check the monitor list.
There's one consolation, Dr. Thurston.
What's that?
We put it together. We ought to be able to take it apart.
Yes. Yes, we ought to. But can we?
The second act of Suspense continues in 1 minute. And now we continue with act two of Misfire, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. There's no walking away from an atom bomb. No asking who left it there. So it becomes a story of people, the disarming. Lee Thurston, MIT graduate, 1932, old enough to have been appalled at the thought of an atom bomb. Scientific enough to accept it. Human enough to demand influence and its use. John Grant, 36, a red-headed giant who daily deals in miracles, believes in them, makes them work. Frank Butler, former child prodigy, grown bald at 28, bachelor, attendant now at the bigamous wedding of electronics, nuclear fission, and power politics.
An on-site test is the only way to check it out.
No, Butler, that would mean 2 men at ground zero.
But there's no explanation for what we're finding here.
He's right, Doctor. If we accept our data, we have a power failure originating at the cab itself.
With a risk of delayed detonation, Grant. You can't forget that.
I'm not. There are 2,000 Marines and 12 CD men out there. How long can they wait?
Dr. Thurston?
Yes, what is it?
General Matting on the phone, sir. Wants to know if he can evacuate yet.
No, not until we know more about the cause of the misfire. I'll let him know.
Yes.
Oh, Winship.
Yes?
Tell the photo lab I can't wait any longer for those final pictures of the patch bay under the bomb.
I will, sir.
For now, we'll go over those monitor checklists again, gentlemen. We mustn't have any errors.
News Knob has a mathematics of its own. The bomb plus the names of the men in the control point plus a little background data equals the story. Men pile 150,000 years to make enough plutonium to satisfy the bomb. Point out how the Cold War overcame all that. But tell mostly of the struggle to stop Jackhammer this morning. Hello, New York.
I'll give you Barney, will you, honey? Thomas Spears. Yeah, well, then call him at home. It's important. Hey, where'd you get the coffee? I need some. I'm freezing over here.
Here you go.
Hey, thanks a lot. Hello, Barney. Now, listen, you better call that off and go on into the office. This may develop into something out here. The bomb didn't go off. No, not a delay. It just didn't take. Well, the rumor we hear is that the last boys to hook it up are going to have to go out and coax it down. How do I know who it'll be? Yeah, I know that's what I'm here for. I know. Yeah, and Barney, don't call me. I'll call you.
The Marine lies flat now, permission granted. He hears wasted advice from his nearest neighbor on how to run an atom bomb test. But he thinks about Vegas. And he wonders whether he'll ever see her again, the girl with the dark hair, the dark eyes, the wonderful smile, and the Cadillac convertible. In the civil defense shelter, it's hot. No air conditioning for 40 minutes now. These heavy clothes and sealed up this way. Somebody better call control. They've bloody well forgotten us. Ah, but they haven't. More important things. Like the photo lab with the final pictures of the victim, Jack Hammer. Pictures of the bomb with its viscera displayed, A to B and yellow to ground. The proper circuit for agony.
Well, this one's okay. This one's all right. The pictures show the patch cords are all okay, Dr. Thurston.
Oh, wait a minute. Just a minute now. We've always assumed that if we got power to the site proper, that it would go on to the bomb.
Of course. The door to the cab completes the circuit. Voltage to the door, voltage to the bomb.
All right, then. What if the voltage didn't get beyond the door?
Oh, that's impossible. Our monitors show the door completely closed.
All right, but what if it didn't? For some reason.
What reason? What could go wrong that wouldn't show on the monitors?
I don't know, but it's got to be out there. Let me go check it.
I can't order anybody out there.
I'm asking to go.
I'll go with you, Frank.
No.
Well, if anybody goes, it should be two. You'd need a phone line during the climb in case we found anything here. You'd need test equipment, tools for opening the door manually, radiation test gear, and a wrench. That disconnect would have to be made immediately, Frank.
A wrench?
What's the matter? You look ill.
No, nothing, sir. I've had no sleep, I guess.
500 feet and no power for the elevator, Frank. I'll go with you.
All right. But I ought to go alone.
Act 3 of Suspense follows in 1 minute. And now we continue with Act 3 of Misfire, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. The afterbirth of darkness is light. That insipid gray light of a desert dawn. And the night animals scurry homeward. And the day things began their minor motions. And slowly it begins a gradual creep of light and warmth across the land. Till its source explodes in the vastness of the desert. And there it becomes the sudden kiss of heat. Heat that warms. Heat that kills. And the in-between heat. The heat that expands. Man's product, that awkward wrench, lies in its cramped position on the tower. Having severed the connection to the bomb, it tries to make amends by stretching, ever so slightly expanding, encouraged by the sun. The electronic condensers on the door await their cue, metal on metal. And that blinding concussion that has no beginning nor any end. And the tortoise, unaware, accepts his gift from the land and goes in search of his image.
I better go up first, John.
No, you've got a man on the phone. I'll start first, open the door manually and check for radiation. Then you shoot in and disconnect the thing.
All right. Hey, John?
Yeah?
You think we'll ever get off the tower?
We may never get on it if we sit here and talk. Let's go.
Hello, Barney. Now, listen, they've started climbing the tower. That's right, 500 feet. I don't know how many stories that is. The Washington Monument is 550, I think. But, now, look, get this, Barney. Play this one straight, will you? No heroics. This one will stand on its own. Sure, we're in a detonation alert. Well, who knows what's going to happen?
Fear of falling. It never goes away. It only becomes conditioned to the environment, and 500 feet straight up has no relation to man. To look down or not to look down, this becomes the problem. Then what do you look at? The eyes of the man below you? No. Now, they reflect the fear of two men. The expanse of dry lake, do you look at that? No, it shimmers in the coming heat and brings on the dizziness. Or do you look inside? The fear of God? Yes, you might look there. That might help. But for the most part, you climb. You lift each aching limb after the other. The next platform is the last. Well, the Irish do it in their land. The traveler never has more than a mile to go. Never. Just beyond that rise, sir. And then it becomes easier. The next platform. And then the next. And the next.
Just a second, Frank. How you doing?
Okay. How much further?
One more platform, Frank. Just one more.
It's murder.
There's one consolation, though.
What?
Going down. We'll have power to the elevator afterwards, and we'll ride down.
Maybe. If there isn't afterwards.
Get on the phone and tell Dr. Thurston we're here.
Okay. Dr. Thurston? Dr. Thurston?
Yes.
We're at the top.
Good. Have you found anything?
Grant is at the door now. We'll make a manual entry as soon as we can.
Good.
Frank, tell him to read the voltage sheet on this door. I don't think it's completely closed.
Check the voltage sheet on the door, Doctor.
Hey, Frank, come here.
What is it?
Yes, hello. Were you talking to me?
Hold it, Doctor.
Can you see it? There. Look, from here. There's a small wrench.
Oh, no.
It's wedged in the door there. You see it?
John, it's mine. That's my wrench. I must have dropped it when we were up here arming the bomb.
It can happen. Look through the glass. It severed the detonation circuit. That's what happened.
But it completed the door contact.
Sure, that's why the monitors didn't show it. Good Lord, Frank, look how close it is to making contact.
John, that's going to go any second.
Take it easy now. Move and shade that thing. Heat expansion will set it off.
How's this?
Give me the phone. Dr. Thurston. Dr. Thurston, can you hear me?
Grant, is that you?
Now listen carefully. We've found the problem. A small hand wrench has been accidentally dropped into the door track.
Good Lord.
Now apparently it severed the detonation circuit, but it's so close to making the contact now that we've got to have power to the door.
Not while you're there. Come off the tower. We'll open it.
No, you don't understand. The door condensers are already loaded with enough power to detonate the bomb.
Well, is the wrench above the contact?
Yes.
Then opening the door will drop the wrench and set it off.
Look, you got to give me power, just enough to make the door jump. I'm putting a pair of pliers on the wrench. I'll yank it out as soon as you loosen the door.
What if you miss?
I'll never know about it.
John, you gotta do something fast. The sun is moving.
Thurston, you've got to. You can't leave us like this.
I can't risk it. Try to get back.
Not a chance. Now, if you could only see it.
All right. I'll do it. Windship, give me ground zero power on my count. Just do it. I gotta explain now. Grant?
Yes.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Grant, I'll give you a 10-second count.
Make it five.
All right, five. Now get a good hold on that wrench. Five. Four. Three. Two. One. Huh. Are we out of it?
Nice going, John.
We're out of it, Thurston. We're out now. The bomb can't go off.
The desert sun works its subtle magic on the wrench, expanding ineffectually on the platform floor. The Marine stands up in the trench. The CD man sheds his top-secret uniform, strips to the cuff unashamed. The newsmen converge on ground zero. The redhead and the young bog man hop from the welcome elevator to see the tortoise scurrying ponderously toward his burrow. They pick him up. But he pretends not to be there at all. But he is. And they know it.
So they take him back to control point. To live. For another day.
Suspense on Tuned to Yesterday from the 6th of October 1957 on CBS. And that does it for this hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Livonier. Thanks for tuning in.